If a tree falls in a forest and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound? Well, that is the question that philosophers and scientists have pondered for centuries. Now, scientists would argue that a falling tree creates vibrations which move through the air, and those vibrations exist whether or not there is anyone present to hear them. Philosophers, on the other hand, would argue that without someone there to actually perceive those vibrations and understand what they are, then no sound exists. So which side are you on? But before you answer that, here's another question for you. If a musician, if a musician performs in a public space and no one listens, has the musician truly played? Don't answer that. Yes, it is an odd question. But believe it or not, this very question has been put to the test. Back in 2007, the violinist Joshua Bell performed incognito in a subway station in Washington, D.C. Joshua Bell is arguably one of the finest violinists of our age. He was born in Indiana in 1967. He's a child. At age four, his parents noticed that he had collected rubber bands from around the house and stretched them across the handles of his dresser drawer. And then he would pull the drawers out and pluck the rubber bands, mimicking the notes that he had heard his mother play on the piano. His parents arranged for formal violin lessons just right away. And at age 14, Bell soloed with the Philadelphia Orchestra. At 17, he played Carnegie Hall. He was quite the prodigy. As an adult, Bell has performed with nearly every major orchestra in the world. Now, almost as interesting as the musician is the instrument which he plays. Today, Bell performs on what is called the Gibson Stradivarius, and it was built in 1713 by the acclaimed violin maker. Bell purchased this violin in 2001 for close to $4 million. And today it's valued at over $14 million. Not that he's selling. So it was on January the 12th, 2007, a Friday if you're interested, at 7:51 a.m. that Joshua Bell quietly walked into a metro station in D.C. He was dressed casually in jeans and a long-sleeved t-shirt, wearing a baseball cap. He removed his priceless violin from its case and laid the case on the ground. And he, for good measure, tossed in a few dollar bills and coins in the case just to prime the pump. And then he began to play. Bell played for 43 minutes. And he didn't play popular tunes that the average person would recognize. He started off with a piece called Chaconne from Johann Sebastian Bach's Partita No. 2 in D minor, which I've never heard of. But Bell describes this as a spiritually powerful piece. It is also incredibly difficult. And from there, he played Franz Schubert's Ave Maria and so on. This impromptu street performance was not some random event. It wasn't Bell waking up one morning and deciding, I'm going to go busk in the subway and earn a few dollars. No. All this was carefully orchestrated and organized by the Washington Post newspaper as an experiment of sorts. There were reporters from the Post there watching the crowd. A hidden video camera was recording everything that took place. But the premise of the experiment was very simple. What would happen if a world-renowned talent with a multi-million-dollar instrument, began to play anonymously in a public space, what would happen? Well, the answer is nothing. Nothing's going to happen. In the 43 minutes that Bell performed, exactly 1,097 people walked through the metro station. And of those 1,097, only seven stopped to listen for any amount of time. The rest just kept going. It wasn't all for naught. Bell did collect $32 in his violin case. But to put that in perspective, on stage, he commands about $1,000 a minute. So why didn't more people stop to listen to this musician? I mean, could they not recognize the greatness that was right there in front of them? Couldn't they just take a moment and enjoy it and listen and appreciate? Well, there are a lot of answers to that question of why people didn't stop. Well, the biggest one is that it was early in the morning, and these folk were on their way to work. Their minds were full of all that they had to do that day. The music, yeah, it was nice, but they had a schedule to keep. They had places to be, things to do. They didn't know who this musician was. Nobody recognized him. And many of them had headphones listening to their own music. Now, it would be interesting to track down each person who walked by and tell them exactly what they had just missed. But that would actually be a bit cruel, wouldn't it? But this story does make me wonder what wonderful things that I miss each day in my busyness. And furthermore, as a person of faith, I wonder what God encounters that I ignore as I rush from A to B. What is it that I am denying myself? For the past 5 weeks, we've all been reading through Paul's letters to the church in Corinth. And as I've mentioned, while staying in the Greek city of Corinth, Paul reached out to residents of that city and told them about the gospel of Jesus Christ. He taught people about this gospel. And as he taught, he gathered folks into a worshiping community. And after 18 months, he moved on to Ephesus to start over, to start another church. But he kept in touch with his old parishioners and sadly learned from them of conflicts and divisions that were occurring within that church in Corinth. And so he writes back to this church with words of guidance and instruction, of encouragement, and most of all, of love, because he truly loved these people. As we've journeyed through these letters, you might get the impression that being in a church is all about doing things in a certain way, about being proper, about following the rules. And through his correspondence, Paul does address each of these issues within the church one by one because they were important to the people. But to be honest, Paul would be the first to admit that these issues are secondary. They are not what being a church is about. They are distractions. Being a Christ follower is not about being perfect. It's not about being how you worship. It's not about the food you eat or the car you drive. Being a Christ follower is much, much more. And Paul, in our reading for today, he's taking a step back from those distractions in Corinth to remind the people that to be a Christian is to see the light of God in the face of Christ. That's it. To be a Christian is to see the light of God in the face of Christ. Let's imagine that we could have a conversation with Paul today. And we were to tell him this story about Joshua Bell, about how so few people stopped to listen when he played his violin there in the subway. Paul would likely say that those people who walked by without stopping and listening did so because they were veiled. That is, they could not recognize the beauty of this music because of the veil covering their eyes, or their ears in this case. And this is what he tells the people at the church in Corinth, that for those who cannot see the glory of God, it is because it is like their eyes are covered with a veil. For those in Corinth, the gospel is there in front of them. He brought it to them. He taught them the gospel. And either they can see it or they are veiled. And if they are veiled, he says, if they are veiled, it is because Satan, the one Paul refers to as the god of this age, has blinded their minds. Satan, the god of this age, has drawn a veil over their faces. Satan has blinded them to, quote, keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ. And Christ, Paul tells us, is nothing less than the image of God. Those who are blind cannot see God, even though God is right there before them in Jesus Christ. As Christ followers, their purpose and our purpose as well is to let the light shine out of the darkness. This light is God's light. It is the light of creation that has been with us since the beginning of time. It's not just the light of the sun in the sky. It is the light of God's Son. The light of the gospel illumines our world and enables us to see what we would not see otherwise. Today is Transfiguration Sunday. Lent begins Wednesday. But before we enter into that season of penitence, a season that takes us to Easter, it is a good time to be reminded of who Jesus is, because Lent can get a bit dark. And this reminder acts like a flashlight, bringing light to our penitence and to our grief, to our sorrow, as we move towards Easter. In the account of the Transfiguration, Jesus leads Peter, James, and John up a mountain. They are alone, just the four of them. And together they pray. And there at the top of the mountain, Jesus changes. He is transfigured. Even his clothes are shining brightly. And then along with Jesus are Moses and Elijah, who are ancient heroes of the faith, and they are deep in conversation with Jesus. There on that mountain, for the very first time, the disciples are able to see Jesus as something more than human. He is divine. His face and his being reflect the glory of God. And although they had not seen this before, this is indeed the true Christ that they have been following. He's not just the Christ of miracles and healing. He's not just the Christ of stories and parables and preaching to crowds. No, this is the Christ, the one who reflects God's glory. Peter, James, and John are frightened by all that's going on. They see it, but they don't understand it. Peter has an idea, a suggestion. Peter's a fix-it sort of guy. He wants to do something here. And his suggestion is that they should build three booths or huts or structures. In other words, what he really wants to do is build three churches to contain these holy figures, three little museums to hold this moment in time. This would be a place where people could come up the mountain and see Jesus and Elijah and Moses. They could stop at the souvenir stand. They could buy some lunch at the food trucks over here. It would be great. But that's not what God wants. And God shouts out, no. God says, this is my son, the beloved. Listen to him. Peter's idea, it was a good one, really. But it's what we humans always do. We create distractions. We distract from what we should be seeing. But God says to Peter, listen to him. So the question I want to leave you with today, the question is this. In your everyday lives, whether it is outside the church or in this church, are you a victim of distractions? Do you get sidetracked by the demands that blind us to God's presence, from the demands that keep us from listening to the words of God's Son? Are we like those people walking through the metro station that can't hear the glorious music that is right there in front of us? Are we willing to confront the question if what we are doing each moment, is it a distraction or is it part of our mission? Being a follower of Christ is not easy. We are sinful. We are broken. We are easily distracted by what is not our primary, what is not primary to our goal of loving God. What we have to remember and what we have to make the focus of our lives every day is to see the glory of God in the face of Christ and listen to him. Amen.